what increasingly looks like maybe winter may actually start peaking to spring on occasion now, which is a good thing. Today, we're going to do a couple things. First of all, I want to give the committee an opportunity to talk with folks about transportation funding. I know for those of you who participated in the interim committee meetings, we've been talking about how we're moving for what we think will be a significant investment opportunity and request for the 2009 legislative session. And there's a lot of elements that are involved in that. As soon as we sign the die out of the special session, the focus of our interim committee will be to be driving to developing that proposal and incorporating the things that we have heard over the last 6 months and will continue to hear. And I think it's really important to see what else is going on around the state in terms of transportation, how that may impact what we're doing, information that might be conveyed to us and what other people are hearing. I think it's all valuable as we move on from a state level to hear from our partners as to what they are doing and what they're hearing on transportation. So with that, I'm going to ask that I'm going to open the informational hearing on transportation funding and ask that Chip Terhune, Steve Clark, and Hans Bernard from the Governor's Transportation Task Force group come forward. And thank you, gentlemen, first of all, for coming and for your hard work. And ask each of you to give us a brief update of where you are, and then we'll have the committee interact on that and any questions they may have. So welcome. And I'll let you guys figure out how you want to go.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Metzger, members of the committee. My name is Chip Terhune. I'm Governor Kulongoski's chief of staff. I want to say it's a pleasure to be here this afternoon. I think, Chair Metzger, you in particular, and also Senator Starr, have led on this issue for quite some time, and the governor is deeply appreciative of your efforts and the committee's efforts to really move this issue forward. I think a lot of groundwork last session, frankly, was laid by both of you and the committee, and from that vantage point, we really, really appreciate it. In the interim efforts that you guys have been working on, as well as from between now and obviously 09, we hope to work very, very closely with you throughout that. The governor is and this is not news necessarily, because this has been out for a little while, certainly since over the course of the last 6 months. But one of his top priorities for the 2009 legislative session will be transportation. And he anticipates really coming forward with a plan that has two major components. The first piece is a legislatively enacted funding package, hopefully, that provides real investment in the state's aging transportation system. And then the second piece is really a new look and a new vision about what transportation means, particularly around sustained incremental investment in environmentally responsible systems. So those are really kind of the two major components here. Obviously, multimodal is implied, but I'll just say that out loud as well. In November, the governor actually established three committees to kind of roll up the sleeves and begin to work on this issue. The first committee is entitled the Vision Committee, and it's chaired by Pat Wrighton of Pacific Corps. That is tasked really sort of with almost a three-part effort. The first part is to envision and discuss with all the committee members a long-term vision of what the transportation system in Oregon looks like 25 or 30 years from now. From that point, they will move forward to sort of key benchmarks and discuss sort of between now and 25 or 30 years from now, what are sort of the key elements of this and when should they be put in place and sort of what order. And then the final piece that committee will be working on is what is the first step down that path and what does that piece look like and how should it be brought to the 2009 legislature for consideration. The second committee is the Governance Committee, and that's chaired by Steve Clark of Community Newspapers, who joins us today. The Governance Committee really very simply is looking at how dollars are allocated, how projects are prioritized, and making sure that there is transparency and accountability throughout the system. So that's really, in the simplest terms, that particular committee's approach. And then the third piece is the Public Awareness Committee, which the governor has asked me to chair. And that's focused on talking about transportation and trying to provide some public efforts in an effort to really almost supplement and aid the Governance Committee and the Vision Committee in terms of their own work and make sure that how the public feels is really translated into those thoughts and to make sure that the interest groups are adequately represented in this and also to make sure that the public is aware as we kind of move down this track. So the only other piece that I would add before I turn it over to these other gentlemen is that the governor has established a series of core principles by which he is asking all of these committees to do their work. And it's very simply sort of five items. I won't read them, but I'll just kind of highlight them. The first one is economic development. The governor clearly believes that transportation is at the very heart of economic development. One out of every five jobs in Oregon is transportation related, and he considers it vital not just to the traded sector, but also, frankly, to small business as well. Goods to market is absolutely critical. Transportation, frankly, also creates jobs in terms of the infrastructure as it's maintained and expanded. Obviously, that's a significant issue, particularly given last Friday's news about revenue decline. The next core principle is local decision-making and identification of priorities. Really wants this to be a ground-up operation. The governor would like to see this, work closely with the area commissions and transportation, local governing bodies, and stakeholders. The third piece, also very, very important to the governor, is sustainability. The state has to develop, in his mind, an investment strategy that preserves the current system but also makes strategic investments with an eye toward greenhouse gas reductions in particular. Fourth, transparency and oversight. As I mentioned, the governance committee is very focused on this in terms of adopting strategies and policies that are transparent and accountable. And then the last piece is the governor absolutely believes this has to be a statewide system. This is not one part of the state versus another. This is all of us in it together. So with that, I'd like to say again, thank you, and turn this over maybe to Hans Bernard at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hello, Mr. Bernard.
Hello, Chair Metzger, Vice Chair Starr. My name is Hans Bernard. I'm the governor's policy advisor on transportation, or one of the governor's policy advisors on transportation. I'm here today at the request of Pat Wrighton, who is the chair of the Vision Subcommittee. He is unable to be here because of business travel today, but he asked me to come and give you a report. The Vision Subcommittee is made up of about 30 members who represent the four largest business organizations in the state: Oregon Business Association, Oregon Business Council, Portland Business Alliance, and Associated Oregon Industries, transportation leaders from TriMet to the building trades, engineers, city and county leaders, the truckers, AAA, so it's a pretty wide variety, including the environmental community and land use community in this state. As Chip mentioned, the committee has adopted a work plan that splits their work into three major parts. The first is an effort to consider how transportation should look in Oregon in 25 or 30 years. How should the modes interact? How should they be funded? What is the system of the future, knowing that the revenue structure that we have at this point is one that is only declining? The second effort that this committee will engage in is to use a bad pun, how do we build a bridge from the system of today but to the one of the future? So looking at the system that we have in place at this point and the one that this committee envisions for Oregon in 30 years, what are the steps that need to be taken to get from one system to the other? What are the regional conversations that we need to engage in, pilot projects that may need to be funded, or additional technologies that we should invest in to get from one to the other? And the third, and probably most important for you folks, is how can we put together a package for your consideration that provides a substantial investment for the 2009 legislative session, but an investment that is it is made with an eye toward that system of the future. What are the components of environmental sustainability? What are the components of pilot project funding? What are the strategic investments and projects of statewide significance that will move us in the direction of a Oregon transportation system for 20 to 30 years down the line? The committee so far has had two meetings, the first of which was primarily organizational. I know some of you have participated in the meetings by phone and in person, and we really appreciate that. Your input is greatly appreciated. The second meeting focused on homework assignments that were given to the different organizations around the table. We asked folks to, from their organization's perspective, consider how transportation should look in 30 years and bring back to the group a statement that reflected that from their organization's perspective. So the second meeting of the Vision Subcommittee really focused on having having folks present those vision statements and identifying some of the key themes that ran throughout them and the key challenges that we're seeing that we may face moving forward. The committee hopes to have a policy recommendation for 25 to 30 years into the future for the governor's consideration at the end of April, early May timeline. Then the committee will move into that second part of the conversation about how do we get from that system or the system of today to that system envisioned in the first part of their work plan. And we will move in mid to late summer toward the nitty-gritty conversation of putting together a package for your consideration and or the consideration by the governor to be presented to you in January of 2009. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Steve, and happy to respond to any questions.
That's what we'll do. Thank you. Mr. Clark, thank you for coming.
Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for allowing me to be here today. My name is Steve Clark. I'm president and publisher of the Portland Tribune and community newspapers, and active for the last decade and a half or more in transportation and economic development issues. As did Chip, Chair Metzger, Vice Chair Starr, I'd like to personally thank you for your leadership and contributions, beginning with OTIA 1 and numerous other efforts. You folks have led the way in distinguishing solutions and building momentum for Oregon and transportation. We look forward to working with you more in the future than we even have in the past to continue to provide for a better Oregon in a variety of ways, and transportation improvements and investments are one of those ways. So thank you both. And Senator Starr nationally as well. So thank you. As we imagine this issue of transportation and ship and Hans have allowed us to understand that the governor has laid a course to talk about transportation. It's really the public talks about it. It's more than just roads. It's more than just highways. It certainly is the economy. It's livability. It's rural. It's urban. It's public safety. It's the environment. When we talk about the management of the system, the governance, it's a deep, it's a convoluted, and it's a competitive circumstance. The governor has asked us to imagine this issue and how do we spend money. I would like to think it's more than that, and we will push ourselves to imagine that, to imagine how do we govern this complicated system. That's not an easy matter. It's about who decides, how we make decisions, how decisions are carried out, and as my partners have offered, how do we do that in transparent, accountable ways. And throughout the history of transportation that I've been involved in, both as a journalist and as a involved citizen, we have sometimes done that better than others. We have not been as transparent. We have not been as accountable. The public sees that and shakes its head. And it sometimes walks away from the issue because they're disgusted. We have a chance with you, with the governor, to change that. Senator Berger, several weeks ago at our first committee meeting, was calling in by phone and reminded our governance committee members, and we number 20 to 30, and as the other committees are, made up of diverse representation, business, state, regional governments, local business people, transportation interests, environmental interests, bike. But the senator said, I have a local short line railroad that is essential to my community, that is essential to my economy, and the rail systems of really the nation as they connect Oregon and short line are essential in this conversation, and she's right. So is water-based transportation, so is air-based transportation, because they're all connected. As we dig into this system and determine and suggest to the governor and he to you how to better govern the system, I think the public's going to be watching. So while we don't have individual members of the public, except we're all Oregonians, we need to imagine how do we engage them in this conversation. And you'll hear more in a minute from Chip about that public awareness, public engagement, public education role. And I know the Senator Metzger, you've been studying that as well. The as we open the door to the public and to our own introspection, we'd encourage ourselves to open the door further to the legislature. And each of our committee members, our committee meetings, we meet for about an hour and a half to 2 hours the first Wednesday of each month, except in March. It'll be the second. We invite you, and we'll provide notification of those meetings to you so that you can be involved. My experience in public outcomes, and I think Senator Starr would agree with me, and particularly in Washington County, we've learned that we move things forward by establishing benchmarks and achieving those, by then talking with the public about extending those benchmarks and achieving those, and continuing that momentum building. We have talked among ourselves that we must do that with governance. We must define benchmarks. In some cases, they may be low-hanging fruit, and develop some ways to achieve those to before moving on to the next tougher subjects and then yet the even harder subjects. That's a good idea in that it builds a track record of success among ourselves. It builds legislative confidence in investing in whether it's money or changes in whether it's statutory or constitutional issues that the public would participate in. But in building that momentum, we can begin to see progress. The public says, oh, I get that. I get how that works, and I get how transportation is relevant to me. The point I would like to make to you on this matter is it's essential that we move today as Oregonians, as legislators, as the state governor, as citizens, because the system of governance and the system of transportation is beginning to unravel. We have representatives of the city of Portland with us today behind, and they're advancing a street maintenance fee. Multnomah County is imagining a registration fee to take care of the Selwood Bridge. I live in the city of Tigard, which adopted a gasoline tax to fix one intersection on Pacific Highway. A gasoline tax to fix one intersection. Not a freeway, but Pacific Highway. We are a system in collision, and as Senator Berger said, we're a system that's not connected. The public gets that. So as we begin to establish considerations for how to make that system work well together, to work accountably, to work transparently, and to utilize funds in an effective way, I think the time is now. The areas of interest that we have are not just urban. They are rural. They are regional. They are county. They're environmental. They're land use. And they're transportation. So how do we connect those systems and govern them well is what we will be about. Again, we thank the committee, the chair and vice chair, for your contributions to this effort, and welcome your participation and your advice on how we can do a better job and run parallel with these two committees and run parallel to intersect with the legislative efforts so that in 2009 we have the ability to begin moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clark, and thank you for your dedicated service as a citizen on this issue. Chip, you had some other things you wanted to do before we had questions?
Yeah, good, Chair, Mr. Just in a little bit of detail around the Public Awareness Committee, we've had two meetings so far, both in January. The meetings are not small. I think there are maybe not enough seats at the table for all the folks that want to come in. The attendance is actually impressive, and frankly, the collaboration is also equally impressive. In the initial meeting, Adam Davis, the pollster from Davis Hibbets, came in and provided us with I think what some of us would call a reality check. And Chair Metzger, you were there for that meeting, kind of providing us with a healthy dose of reality as we kind of look at this issue. Full recognition that as I think an Oregonian poll recently outlined as well, transportation may not arise to the very top of issues in the minds of Oregonians, but nonetheless is absolutely critical for the state and for all the issues that Oregonians care about. I mean, the interrelation is absolutely unequivocal. From that, the second meeting was really a conversation about what next. How do we move forward? And the conversation was reduced to, frankly, the fact that there is an inordinate amount of research already out there. I mean, the number of polls and focus groups is actually fairly staggering. I think every interest group has probably at least three or four rooms filled with polling briefs and so forth that have been on this issue for years. So one of the thoughts that the committee had and decided to pursue was maybe we should pull together all of that research and then ask someone to actually review it all, identify what gaps we're missing, what are the questions we haven't asked, and what are the key salient points of information that we can pull out of that? What are the key nuggets there? And then from that, maybe we could do some message development. We could identify whether or not additional research needs to be done to plug those gaps. And then obviously the next step would be to develop a public awareness plan from that point forward, whether it's centered around, you know, the public itself or opinion leaders or stakeholders and kind of move in that way. So we're in the process of pulling that request for proposal together, and we'll hopefully have at least some of those proposals back in the month of March and then kind of move forward from there. So that's just a brief update in terms of where that public awareness committee is. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I'm going to do here is I've got a couple of people who have been really kind enough to come on a timeline, so I want to get that taken care of, and then we'll kind of move around a little bit. So, Mr. Bernard, if you'd step back just for a bit so I can have one seat extra, I'm going to ask County Chair Wheeler to come forward because he has to be back for his own meeting in an hour, and from Multnomah County, and then we'll go to questions and we'll... Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair, committee members, for having me here today. My name is Ted Wheeler. I'm the chair of Multnomah County, and I was asked if I could just briefly give you a survey of the transportation issues that Multnomah County is currently facing and what we propose to do about it and how we could perhaps team up and help each other address our transportation needs. First of all, just kind of the broad brush overview, Multnomah County is in the same boat that most local jurisdictions are in the state of Oregon. We're facing a so-called structural deficit. It's created by the fact that local governments, counties in particular, have very limited sources of revenue by statute. The primary source of revenue that we have as a jurisdiction is the property tax. And as all of you certainly understand, that revenue source is capped at approximately 3% growth per year by measures 47 and 50. The problem arises from the fact that core inflation is currently running at over 4%. 62% of our costs are human resources related, which currently run between 6 and 9%, which is consistent with any private sector organization. So therein lies the rub as far as the structural deficit. With regard to transportation specifically, as you're all aware, the statewide gas tax, which is our primary source of transportation funding, has been fixed since 1993. Multnomah County does have a 3 cent per gallon gas tax, which has been fixed since 1988. The problem, of course, is that the core inputs for transportation maintenance, speaking nothing of new transportation infrastructure, but existing facilities, asphalt, steel, concrete, the costs of those have gone up dramatically in recent years. Just in the last 10 years alone, the cost of construction for Multnomah County has gone up over 85%. So our real ability to purchase those services around transportation have declined. In terms of what we're responsible for, the county has 27 bridges and viaducts, which includes 6 of the Willamette River bridges, 5 of which are in downtown Portland. In addition, we have 300 miles of roadway. Over the next 20 years, we project $750 million deferred capital maintenance backlog on those facilities. As a local elected official, I certainly believe, and my Board of County Commissioners agrees, we have an obligation. We have a duty to do something about that backlog to the degree that we can do it. Having said that, I will also just tell you straight up that we do not have the resources, we've never had the resources, and we never will have the resources to maintain that infrastructure the way it needs to be maintained. We've got to go beyond the local jurisdiction to look for dollars. But what we're doing at the local jurisdiction this year, we've proposed a vehicle registration fee in Multnomah County targeted towards the Willamette River bridges. It would be $24 per vehicle per year, the ones that we're statutorily able to assess a fee on, which is those under 26,000 pounds. We are proposing to raise $100 million specific to the Selwood Bridge project. We consider that our contribution to the overall cost of the project, the local match, if you will. We will also be going to the region, to the state, and the federal government to seek help for that particular project. The overall cost of that project is estimated to be in the range of $300 million. In addition, there'll be $5 million per year that we'll put towards the already identified capital maintenance needs on the other existing Willamette River bridges. Although I'm sure everybody here is aware, just to underscore the Selwood problem in particular, it's the busiest two-lane bridge in the state of Oregon. It currently has a traffic count in excess of 30,000 vehicles per day. It has a federal sufficiency rating of a whopping 2 on a scale of 1 to 100. More disturbing is that everybody has something to lose from that. We no longer carry freight over that bridge. Trucks are excluded from the bridge by virtue of the weight reductions we've had to put into place. Moreover, buses, transit is currently excluded from the Selwood Bridge, and even some emergency vehicles are now excluded from the Selwood Bridge. The Board of County Commissioners will make a decision later this month as to whether or not we wish to refer the vehicle registration fee to the ballot. So where do we go from here as far as legislation, and what would we like to see? First of all, Multnomah County is committed to working with the rest of our region, and through J-PACT at Metro, we agreed this morning, in fact, that we would put together a unified proposal around legislation in the 2009 session. So you will be seeing that from the region and a unified and consistent message. Having said that, there are other fixes that we would certainly encourage you to take a look at. For example, our own experience with the vehicle registration fee at the local level is that it's so inflexible that it's almost useless as a tool. The current state statute has the so-called spider web, which requires us to go to jurisdictions with over 3,000 population or jurisdictions which are fully encompassed within Multnomah County to get permission to either refer to the ballot in the case of 5 jurisdictions or in the case of revenue sharing, 8 other jurisdictions. What that means for us specifically is, as the chair of Multnomah County, I've approached Washington County, Clackamas County, TriMet, Metro, the cities of Portland, Gresham, Fairview, Troutdale, Wood Village, Maywood Park, Lake Oswego, and Milwaukee. And I can just assure you, I get some very funny stares when you see the chair of Multnomah County in Washington County asking for permission to ask the taxpayers in Multnomah County if they would be willing to increase their fees to pay for infrastructure that they're responsible for in Multnomah County. It doesn't make any sense no matter how I try to present that. So I would encourage you to get rid of the so-called spider web. Moreover, there are other preemptions that we would ask you to take a second look at. For example, the ballot measure for right now for a vehicle registration fee, we are required to go to the ballot. Moreover, 40% of any funds raised through a vehicle registration fee at the local level are required to go to the cities in the jurisdiction. I don't know if 40% is the right number or 45% is the right number or 32% is the right number, but I would encourage you to remove that hard requirement of 40% and let us work it out with the cities within our own jurisdictions to determine what makes sense with us. Give us the flexibility that we need at the local level to make intelligent decisions around transportation funding. Second of all, there is still statutory language on the books from 1913 that not only in our opinion legally excludes Multnomah County from having tolling authority, which is a problem since we own 6 of the largest bridges in the state of Oregon, but we are also required by that 1913 statute to both operate and maintain those big bridges, which by anybody's definition our regional transportation infrastructure. I would encourage you to look at that because it may well prevent the region from coming together to create either a regional bridge authority or a regional transportation authority. And there is agreement amongst those of us in Washington, Clackamas, and Multnomah counties that we need to create such an authority to be able to maintain the infrastructure that we need to maintain to remain economically competitive and vital as a community. A footnote here that I also want to address. I understand that you've already had testimony around the Cornelius Pass Road. I want to thank you for taking that up as an issue and just assure you that we at Multnomah County take that issue as seriously as you do with regard to taking a look at the safety issues there. The county is already working with both ODOT and the Federal Highway Authority to conduct a road safety audit of the Cornelius Pass corridor. We're also working closely with the Sheriff's Office and the Regional Freight Committee to address the safety concerns that have been raised around the Cornelius Pass Road specifically. It's my understanding, Chair Metzger, that you have asked Senator Johnson to form a committee to see how the legislature might be able to work to remedy some of those problems. We're looking forward to working with you to make that happen. If there's any way that you could be of assistance today, it would be to help us find funding for that road safety audit. It's projected to cost $10,000. We'll do it without you, but we'd love to do it with you and engage you as partners in this process. And again, we remain committed to working with you. And then finally, I just want to assure you that whatever we do at the local level with regard to transportation, we are fully on board with the governor and his desire to make transportation a top priority. Senator Metzger, we've had an opportunity to talk about the legislature's role and interest in transportation that this committee has going forward. We're standing ready to partner with you as well. We want to work with you and be a team player to move this important issue forward for everybody in the state of Oregon. Thank you all very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Chairman Wheeler. And and I know Chairman Wheeler's, particularly because he has to go back up north, I'd like to kind of direct any questions for him first, and then the other people are on a timeline too, but we'll try to get him on the way. One question I just had, and it sounds like you were briefed rather well by Mr. Abramson from our meeting on Cornelius Pass Road, and what you said about that, about our regional transportation, and I think the committee is certainly well aware of all that. It continues to be highlighted in issues like the Cornelius Pass Road, which is in Multnomah County, at least the portion that we have the very great concern about accidents is in Multnomah County, but it actually is a regional, has become, because of the growth in Washington County, a regional transportation corridor, and they're not necessarily people who live in Multnomah County who are using that, the increase, and then the truck traffic because of other issues, it just becomes something that we really are all responsible for, and I think each of us in our districts can look at other issues that we have impacts that are coming from other jurisdictions. I mean, it is a system, and we need to take a look at that. One thing I would ask, again, as I did Mr. Abrahamson, but now that you are here, I realize whatever dollars you have or whatever we could give you still would not meet your transportation needs. And I think with any jurisdiction that would be the case. But I did point out, particularly on the Cornelius Pass issue, is with the $56 million that are being dispersed in October from ODOT to the various jurisdictions, of which Multnomah County was not actually a formula participant, but to make everybody feel good, we gave Multnomah County, we'll be getting $400,000 that was unanticipated because they're really not part of the formula, and suggested that you commit $10,000 of that, knowing that that's coming, and that was rather an accidental disbursement to confirm to the folks there that to pay for that study. I mean, I think that would be an important commitment. And we're not talking about a lot of money, but to know that that is going forward for the folks who, from a citizen standpoint, and I know you're as proud of them as I think as this committee is really taking a thoughtful look at that problem.
Yes.
So I would appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Johnson, you have a question. Let's try to keep him, first of all, with Chairman Wheeler, and then we'll move on to other questions.
Thank you. This is for Chairman Wheeler. Thank you very much for your testimony. It would be very helpful for some of us to have it in writing if you could make it available to the committee. The other thing is that at the Cornelius Pass testimony, The Tasia Bellwood Foundation, I think, would also be a willing funding partner, and Columbia County found themselves in exactly the same position as Multnomah. They were not a formula recipient of the money. They were the beneficiary of $400,000, and I committed to seek out that county commission and see if they would be participatory. I think having multiple funding partners recognizes the regionality of that road, and I am committing to you right now my interest in helping to find other partners to help Multnomah County bear the cost of doing that study.
Thank you, Senator.
Yes. Senator Starr, then Senator Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ted, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Quick couple of questions. Selwood Bridge. You're looking at raising locally $100 million. And the other $200 million, where do you think that's going to come from?
The $100 million from the Selwood would be bonded. So we're leveraging the dollars with bonding capacity. The other $200 million, I should just say I was in Washington, D.C. yesterday. There's no question that we want to go for the 09 appropriate or the 09 reauthorization. And so we're building support in the federal delegation as well. We'd also be interested in going to the regional table since the Selwood Bridge in particular is a regional facility. 70% of the people crossing it are coming from Clackamas County to Multnomah County and Washington County. So I think it's a legitimate regional ask as well.
To follow up on that, Mr. Chair, are you? I think this probably happened before your election. But are you aware that there was a PPP proposal that was laid on the table for Multnomah County as it relates to reconstruction, replacement, reconstruction of the Selwood Bridge?
I'm not sure specifically which proposal you're referring to.
There was a proposal by Bechtel, as an unsolicited, unsolicited proposal.
Yes, yes.
They followed the statute that we passed, basically to lay on the table a proposal to rebuild, replace the Selwood Bridge. Have you taken a look at that at all?
I was aware of the proposal, and I can tell you I've actually never seen the proposal which was consistent with the agreement with Bechtel, which was that the players at the time would not share the proposal, so I have never read the proposal, nor have I had a copy of the proposal.
Mr. Chair, this follow-up, please. It might be interesting in your new role and position to look at that private sector approach to replacing this bridge. I think it might be worth your time to pick up the phone and call the folks at Bechtel and see if they'd be interested in entertaining a further discussion. And I'm excited, really, to hear your thoughts about tolling. 30,000 cars a day across the Selwood at $2 a day, assume that's 5 days a week, assume that's 50 weeks a year, raises a pretty good chunk of change. And if you bond that, you can more than replace the Selwood Bridge. I probably have money to work on some of the other bridges as well. Tolling, I think, is the funding of the future. And, if it takes us changing the state law to allow Multnomah County to partner with others in this region to create a regional tolling authority to toll the bridges over the Willamette River, that's a pure user fee. People that drive across those facilities then pay for those upgrades, repair, replacement, whatever is necessary. You can vary the toll to, when there's a lot of traffic, and it's a traffic a management device as well. It's been used effectively and efficiently all around the world. It's high time that we look at those kinds of technologies as well. So I say that to say thank you for bringing that to our attention. Again, if we need to modify the statute to create that flexibility and freedom at the local level, I'm all for it. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Berger.
Thank you very much. I wanted to follow up because mine is also about tolling. I've been a real supporter of toll roads because I grew up with them, and I think they're a very effective way of funding. So over the last 4 years, I have talked to people in the public about toll roads. Our guardians that I've talked to, and their objection and pushback is that they want to be assured that when the project is completed, they no longer have to pay. And so I think that what happens is in government, it's a source of revenue that's hard to give up. And so while you're paying off everything, then at the end of the road, you don't want to do it. The other thing is I have a question. I've been looking at projected population growth figures for the state of Oregon. Do you happen to know what your county might be facing in population growth?
I have seen those figures. I cannot give you the specific information. I can tell you region-wide, metro-wide, we're looking at approximately a million additional people over the next 20-some-odd years. So there will certainly be population growth. The west portion of Multnomah County, the urban core close to Portland, is not projected to grow nearly as rapidly as the eastern portion of the county. Most of the growth is going to take place in the eastern portion of Multnomah County.
Thank you very much.
And if I could, Senator, just address two of the points that you raised. First of all, with regard to tolling, I agree. And as far as integrity in any ask of the public, you have to be very clear about what it is you're using the funds for. And if the purpose of that funding ends, so too should the funding. But I want to also caution people that many of the Willamette River bridges were once tolled, as I understand it. But the maintenance needs continue indefinitely. So you have to, in that scheme, also account for the ongoing maintenance issue. I also just want to point out that tolling, it's going to be more than just the statutory changes that are required. There are multiple owners of Willamette River bridges in close proximity to each other. It's not just our bridges. ODOT's responsible for several of those bridges. The Union Pacific Railroad owns one of those bridges. And what we do know is that if some of the bridges are tolled and some aren't tolled, it could have profound implications for the rest of the transportation flow. So that would have to be worked into any thoughts around tolling as well.
Senator George and Senator Johnson.
Thank you.
This George.
Oh, this George. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then everybody can have one more, then I'm going to let dismiss Chairman Beer.
Commissioner, I appreciate you coming up and look forward to visiting with you about these issues in the future. I think one of the issues that has shocked me about serving on the committee is the numbers that are thrown around to rebuild certain infrastructures. And I guess when I hear that the Selwood Bridge is going to cost $300 million, and I look around the needs around the state, literally there's no way to pay for this stuff. I mean, even if we raised all the taxes anybody could ever bear, there isn't enough. And so what I started doing was talking to a number of local government folks, people in other states, about how come it's so expensive to build infrastructure like bridges here. I mean, how is it possible that one bridge over the Willamette could cost $300 million and a bridge over the Columbia could cost $6 billion? Those numbers don't seem to be of reality to me. And I've been getting quite a lot of interest feedback back. And I guess if I could make one comment to you, it would be this, is that in addition to revenue-raising situations, it would be nice for us as an entire transportation committee and then those interested in transportation and local governments to also talk about what it is about our procedure in this state that makes it so that our transportation projects are so terribly expensive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've got, and I'll give one example and then I'll quit, but I've got one bridge in one of my cities in my district where they had to spend $2 million to put a bridge in where they could have put a culvert in. And that was just one example. And the culvert would have cost a couple $100,000 and the bridge cost a couple $1 million. And those types of regulatory things that we've put on state level are passing on down to the local jurisdictions around this state and causing a great deal of infrastructure costs that we've not calculated. And I guess as part of this dialogue, if we could, I would really appreciate any state requirements that we're putting on you as local governments on how we could speed that process up, trim those requirements down, perhaps speed up the process to lower your cost, not just talk about raising revenues on Oregon incident. So we could continue that. I appreciate it.
There are, I think, are conversations that could be had. One of the odd things is we own the bridge. One side is the city of Portland's road. The other side is ODOT through State 43. And so there are, in fact, requirements that we're required to meet on both sides of those bridges that undoubtedly impact the overall cost of the facility. So thank you for raising
that. If we could settle some of those up front, it may drop a lot of costs in every part of the state. So
thank you.
Well, Chairman, there are a couple of things. First of all, I want to thank you for some of the specificity that you gave us on some of the things we can look at doing statutorily. I always appreciate that, so we can look into things like 1913 laws and spider web laws that give us a chance to see how they're impacting what we're trying to do. And as Senator George has pointed out, to look at other barriers that may exist, not only to getting things done, but to the cost of that, we definitely want to be part of that conversation to see the things move forward. And then finally, just thank you for your leadership on transportation. And I know we've had many conversations and opportunities in the area to talk about that, but it's really refreshing for your leadership on this and understanding its impact as all these other gentlemen and folks in the room do. But it really takes leadership to move it at all levels. And with Multnomah County, I really appreciate that, and I know my colleagues do as well.
Thank you.
We look forward to working with you. Take care.
Thank you all very much. I appreciate it.
Okay, now I'm going to open the... Mr. Bernard, you may come back up. Questions for the Governor's Task Force Committee. Senator Monroe.
Thank you. Transportation is such a critical need that I'm glad the Governor has elevated it to his top priority for the 09 session, and I want to do everything I can to make it happen. We all know that those of us that have thought about and worked in the transportation area for many, many years, and I certainly have, that Oregon, in fact, the greater Portland area, is the transportation hub of the Pacific Northwest, that it's the place where all these transportation modes come together, and that if that transportation hub breaks down, that the whole state of Oregon's economy will suffer. So one of the barriers that we have is this downstate, upstate, rural, urban divide. We've got to somehow, people have got to become convinced that we are one state, and that our transportation system is a system that has to intertwine and that serves the entire state. The other thing is, and it came up in Ted Wheeler's testimony, jurisdictional boundaries are impediments. Somehow we've got to break down those impediments. I used to tell Commissioner Kinnemer, we used to joke around a lot. We served in the Senate together a few years ago, and I used to tell him, I could always tell when I was crossing the line between Multnomah County and Clackamas County, because that was where the sidewalks ended and the potholes began. Well, Clackamas County has made much progress, and Multnomah County, actually, roads and streets have deteriorated since that time, so it's not necessarily the case anymore. But why should an artificial boundary be an impediment to us working on a regional basis, on a statewide basis, to solve problems? Now, if we're going to be successful, and Chip, this comes to you, somehow we've got to convince the citizens of this state of the need. They've got to become convinced that if we allow the transportation infrastructure to further break down, if we don't maintain it, and if we don't add to it, both in terms of highway and transit and rail, that our economy is going to suffer. So somehow I'm passionate about the need, but the average citizen doesn't really understand the need. And so publicity, public relations, getting the word out is going to be critical. The other thing is, people in this state think they're overtaxed, and yet our road and highway and auto-related fees and taxes are about half those in our surrounding states, and by far the lowest of any western state. And so people have got to understand that even with being as frugal and as cost-cutting as we can possibly be, that we're going to need additional revenue if we're going to maintain and build the transportation infrastructure of this state that is absolutely critical to the economic viability and future and jobs and everything. Now, we're going into maybe a mild recession right now. This is the ideal time. Be creating those additional jobs by meeting the transportation infrastructure needs, so that jobs now and jobs, not just hollow jobs, not just empty jobs, but jobs that really make a difference in future generations for this state. So I want to be a part of your team and help. I appreciate the fact that the governor is understanding these issues and has made this a top priority. We've got to move forward together. If we're going to do that, every major factor in our economy has to be behind it. Mm-hmm. We have to have all of organized labor. We have to have all of the major business groups. We have to have the farmers and the loggers and the trucking people and everybody on board if we're going to be successful. If we're us against them, we'll fail. Everybody's got to be on board. Because ultimately, even if we find ways to do this all statutorily without a public vote, and that's probably not possible, but even if we could, anything can be referred. Mm-hmm. And so unless the people are educated to the need, unless we do the kind of thing that Washington County has done very successfully, say, here's a specific need, here's how much it costs, give us some money and we'll do it. And then they did it on time, on budget. And the OTIA projects, same thing. Here's a specific need, specific thing we need to fund, here's the dollars we need to do it, deliver on time, on budget. So you've got to keep the faith with folks as well. So it's a big bite of the apple that we're talking about. It's a huge need. It's a huge package that we'll have to deliver. But not doing it is worse than anything. So we've got to try, and we've got to succeed. And we can succeed if we work together as a team, this entire state, every aspect of our economy, every aspect of government, county, city, state, congressional, certainly, then we can do this.
We got the halftime talk. I've got to get out and then suit up for the third quarter. Thank you, Senator Monroe. Okay, who was the first? Next, Senator Gary George.
Thanks very much. I feel like deja vu all over again. 1999, mm-hmm. Same testimony, the same issue. And I was told, you're an idiot if you don't pass this tax out. And I said, you're making a terrible mistake. Okay, the tax was passed, and guess what the voters did? They asked it for a vote. They brought it to a vote. And the vote was 88% no. And the reason it was 88% no is nobody, because I heard the testimony at the bi-state transportation finance meeting that was held in Beaverton, in which the pollster said nobody believed they were going to get anything. Now, I appreciate the new rhetoric coming from the governor's office, but I need to ask you a question. Back in those days, we had a governor that was saying roads won't solve the problem. We had reports that said in the year 2015, not very far from now, there will have been no new roads built in the Willamette Valley, and I can give you the quote, I still have it, that we're not dedicated to transit. And you're sitting there going, wait a minute, you forget, cars are going to be driving on these roads, and trucks are definitely going to have to use them. How do you convince the people that the governor does believe that roads are a solution, that the governor is going to do something about rail, and that we, in fact, are going to deliver a product to you? Because I keep getting the picture of the two cute little old ladies going into the burger joint and saying, where's the beef? So my question to you, where's the beef from the governor's office relative to this plan?
Chair Metzger, Senator George, excellent question. I think it relates in part to the discussion that's actually already gone on here. This is really a multifaceted conversation, and I think your warnings about 1999 are very appropriate. The tone and tenor of this conversation that the governor's launched here is meant to be extremely inclusive. We have, frankly, give a lot of people an awful lot of credit for attending all of the meetings that are going on in these three subcommittees and others, because it's an awful lot of time and an awful lot of investment and energy. And there are many people that are attending literally all three of these committees as we move forward. And the views that are being expressed are candid and, I think, bold. Some of those views have actually already been shared here. Senator George is exactly right. The cost is an issue. That flexibility is an issue. That's being made very, very clear to us, that accountability and transparency are an issue. The question, sort of fundamental question you ask about how is it we elevate this issue and create passion around it in a responsible fashion is, I think, the question as we move forward between now and 2009. And I think we're beginning that process by creating the largest umbrella, I think, that probably this issue has seen, even 1999. And I think that the passion and the excitement that, frankly, was launched largely by this committee last session is created the wave that we're now riding and building upon. The business community is passionate about this. Perhaps I should say the business communities are passionate about this. I think it's fair to say that labor seems to be passionate about this. The environmental community is extremely excited about engaging around sustainability and how we plug these pieces in. I mean, this is a really kind of remarkable conversation that's occurring, and the question is, how do we capitalize it, formulate it, and then deliver it in a fashion that folks know they're getting what they asked, and how do we convince them of that?
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate a very nice answer that didn't answer my question, but I'm going to tell you a story right now about something that happened recently. I came across a letter that had gone from my county commissioners, including one signed by my wife. And I asked her this question. I said, you're talking about new, sustainable, substantial increase in funding. Do you believe that you're going to get anything for that? As a county commissioner, you're not going to get the Newburgh-Dundee bypass. They have no intention of building that road. We talk about a regional bypass that I believe could be built well under $170 million. Instead, ODOT loads it with $1.7 billion worth of additional things they believe are necessary. So all of a sudden, the question to my wife was, do you really believe you're going to get anything? And the answer was substantially no. Well, then why are we going to do it? Are we going to play this game? It's going to be a political game, and we're not going to tell the people specifically what we're going to deliver? Because if I could, Mr. Chairman, many years ago, we passed a $10 million road levy in Yamhill County. I'm a conservative Republican, liberal Democrat on the county commission. We told the people exactly what we would deliver them. And guess what? People said, you'll never pass it. We did pass it. And guess what we decided to do? We're going to deliver everything we promised the people. With that, you're going to get support. If it's platitudes and niceties, and wouldn't it be nice to envision this when, in fact, trucks can't get around the corner and people can't get to work, or children are being killed on a horribly dangerous road, that anybody knows that doggone road could be fixed? I mean, I'm reminded Highway 20 when I said, we'll take a D8, two other loggers who are going to do it, and we'll have that road ready to be paved within 3 months. And years later, we have a project that went into complete failure, and we're trying to rescue it. So you're going to have to deliver me a big chunk of beef.
Thank you, Senator George. One thing I know, since Senator George didn't serve on the committee last session, and some of the meetings that we had this fall, is the committee has made it very clear that specificity is going to be very important. And to that extent, we have a statewide backbone, but we have been talking around the state and, over the last number of months to local political subdivisions that their parts of any formula dollars, their responsibility then is to articulate what the citizens are going to get for that, so that that's, they plan that, they talk to their citizens, they decide what their priorities are, much like Commissioner Adams has done with the City of Portland, where you can look at the quadrant of your city and see what it will mean to you. So that is extremely important to the committee, is to have to follow the models that have been successful with OTIA, as to this is the need, this is what you want, this is what we're going to deliver, and you deliver it, and then you remind them, like with our white and orange signs, what we delivered. So very valid point, and that's something I know we're very much committed to. I'm going to go with Senator Johnson and Senator Starr.
I think one of the tools in the toolbox is the cost of congestion study that Mr. Clark helped preside over. I know the difficulty that I've had down in Tillamook. For example, I was talking about whither goest Portland, goest the state, and I had one of the county commissioners say, well, if she's supporting Portland, I'm not helping her. The point is that I think the large employment base, the Tillamook Cheese Factory, for example, needs to be the kind of partner in Tillamook County to explain that not being able to get cheese across Portland and out into the global delivery system costs people in Tillamook money. Mm-hmm. And it's using those kinds of local spokesmen to help explain that Portland does have an effect. What happens in Portland should matter as much to an onion grower or a dairyman as it does to people trying to get across the Burnside Bridge. And I think your cost of congestion study is one of those tools, making sure that you train the trainers to go out and talk at local rotaries and all of the places where you need to build those constituencies that come along and say, yeah, we get it. That's going to be terribly important to any kind of successful package. And this is really a sort of backing into commending your leadership and the folks that worked on that cost of congestion study. I think it's an extremely valuable tool.
Mr. Chair, Senator, thank you very much. It is in that it offers illustrative examples. For example, a lumber mill in Toledo that's not able to get a certain length of truck out of the mill onto a state highway in a direct route that has to go 50 miles out of its normal travel pattern. Bad economics, bad transportation, bad environment. I have an 18-year-old son. If his football or basketball team, baseball team, goes to an away game and the person, the hired contractor who works for the school district, runs the doesn't like basketball, they sit in the bus all during the game and stay warm, but we're spewing diesel fumes. Not very smart. Senator George, to your point, the governance committee is going to address specific liabilities, specific shortcomings, specific problem areas, and understand them and begin to recommend solutions. One of those, Senator George, may be the cost of construction, the cost of planning projects. One of them may be, and I believe it will be, both by this governance committee and by the Big Look Task Force, the connection between land use laws and transportation. We will then evaluate and recommend, as I said earlier, prioritized recommendations to the governor and to you that can be advanced to deal with these. I would offer only one other example. We will recommend to keep the citizens involved. As I said, I live in Tigard. In 1993, the state legislature wanted to advance another transportation funding measure. It was not permitted. It did not advance. The interchange at I-5-217, which was going to cost about $130 million and include tunnels under the Farmers Insurance Group building, could not be funded. The proposal by the state was to cut off access between Tigard and Lake Oswego, to cut off traffic from Tigard north to Portland. The communities of Tigard, the business communities, rebelled. And they said, this will not happen. We actually took hammers to the ODOT-1 office of Bruce Warner, who then presided over Region 1. And he said, if you stop beating me around the head with your hammers and work with me, I think we can design an improvement that costs less than we actually could fund. We did that. The project came in at about $49 million, actually cost somewhat more than that, and it's been one of the testaments to Oregon's ability for communities to work together to effectively plan and to get something done, working round the clock 7 days a week for less money than it would have otherwise cost. Now that's an illustrative example. It's not passion. It's how people working together and taking apart the problem and putting it back together actually do things that work. I'm passionate. Each of you are passionate, but we're committed to take the problem apart and put it back together and fix it.
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
I think I had someone else in the queue here. Did I not? Yeah, Senator Dirt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have two questions if I could. Chip, I think one of the things that sort of concerns me a little bit in this conversation is that when you look at the overall how people move around, I'm not, for those of us who are business owners, we understand the importance of the port. We send a couple hundred containers to the port every year. So I'm very concerned about port issues, but for the average livability of citizens, it's obviously the car. Mm-hmm. I don't know, close to 97% of all trips in the state of Oregon are done in single occupancy vehicles. And in your opening conversation, you started talking about the issue of greenhouse gases and some of those issues and the sustainability, which was a theme through your conversation. And then we went into multimodal. Here's my concern, is that when we talk about holding people accountable to make sure we're actually delivering projects for people, you have had in this state probably a good 20 years of this multimodal discussion without adding capacity on the roads. And my biggest fear is that we're going to march down this road with the concerns that many of us have with our constituencies, but the constituencies that put out the priority of the issues of carbon emission, greenhouse gases, sustainability, multimodal transportation are going to block what basically 95 to 97% of Oregonians actually use for a transportation alternative. Now, I'm not saying that we can't deal with issues outside of it, but when we're actually talking about building infrastructure, it seems like to me that we have to be talking about additional capacity in roads. And I guess I'd like you to clarify a little bit of your statement when you're talking about that, because what I don't want to do is get into this conversation about where I think you're going one way and we're really going a dramatically different way. If we're going to a way that we're not going to be talking about road capacity and new road capacity, then that's going to be very, very difficult for most of us to absorb, because what our constituents are demanding are new roads. And if you could just kind of clarify that and get a commitment that we're talking about additional road capacity, I would really appreciate that.
So, Chair Metzger, Senator George, would that I could give you that reassurance right now. I think the governor is really wanting to step back and allow the Vision Committee and the Governance Committee to really work on exactly sort of the wrestling that you've got. But his mandate is very clear up front in terms of the core principles, and that is that it's not just a matter of adding capacity on roads specifically. We're talking about just maintaining what we've got. We're talking about a rail system and I think you properly acknowledge this, that frankly, as much as voters may not and the public may generally not have high regard for freight travel on roads, they have maybe even sort of a greater disconnect as it relates to freight travel on rail. But nonetheless, it's still an integral part of our economic situation in Oregon. I think, though, the governor is absolutely committed to making sure that whatever system in the long term, sort of between now and the next 25 to 30 years, has to incorporate some of the key principles around sustainability and around, greenhouse gas emissions. We are probably a couple car models away from gasoline becoming more or less irrelevant to a large degree. So a lot of this is being handled by the market as it moves forward. But we have to be cognizant that just adding more roads may not be the only approach. It may not be the right approach. And I think the governor really is sort of stepping back and asking these two committees to wrestle with this dynamic, wrestle with this conundrum, and then come forward with something that has a sustainability streak in it a mile wide. Adding capacity on roads is, I think, on the table. It's part of what's being discussed. But I think in all candor, the governor's asking that to be also balanced against all the other needs, rail, everything else that I just mentioned.
One quick follow-up, if I could.
Okay.
I guess I'm just hoping that the balance is 97% of people currently use the road system, and so hopefully the balance is 97% of the people versus a smaller percentage. But if I could, I want to know what it, when we talk about everything's on the table, there's an elephant in the room that we just need to discuss, which is the cost containment issues.
Mm-hmm.
And for these, let's just talk about it in a narrow scope. On these, let's say, for instance, we lay out specific projects, and we say these projects are going to be funded with these dollars, and we're going to come up with a revenue source. And you're going to ask those of us who have constituencies that are very opposed to new taxes, you're going to ask us to vote for that because we need these. Is the governor staff and the governor willing to go into a discussion about Little Davis-Bacon, the suspension of Little Davis-Bacon, or the repeal of Little Davis-Bacon? I don't know where that conversation is, or the suspension on those specific projects. And then also addressing the issues of the regulatory burden with the Department of Fish and Wildlife and those types of permitting processes that are changing the way we build roads so they're considerably more expensive. Those are constituencies of the governor's that I would say that need to be also challenged in this process. If you're asking me to take on taxpayers and say, well, and I'm going to have to advocate to taxpayers, is the governor willing to go and say to the unions, we're going to have to suspend on some projects Little Davis-Bacon, and we're going to have to suspend some of the regulatory burdens that we've put on the table through the environmental policies that may be raising these costs through the roof? And that would be my question to you.
Okay. Chair Metzger, Senator George, the answer at this point is no. Neither of those issues have been either discussed or contemplated within the governor's office, and I think that there would be...
they're not on the table?
At this point, no. The governor really feels strongly that there are some very valid reasons for a lot of those pieces. Having said that, if the committees come back with recommendations around those issues, the governor will certainly look at those. But I think that in terms of direction, the governor is really asking the committees to stay true to the core principles that I sort of outlined at the beginning of this. Cost containment is an issue, and he believes that there are ways, and again, Steve Clark, I think, sort of described the governance committee's efforts to try and wrap their arms around a lot of this, but I think the approach on how you do that is really critical, and I'm not sure the approaches that you're talking about are currently being discussed within those committees.
Thank you, Senator. One thing When Senator Starr and I were at the White House meeting last fall, we heard and learned again from some of our colleagues around the country about the additional cost and burden and time constraints that on projects that occur from using federal dollars because of adding federal regulation. And we heard very specifically from some of our colleagues that they really don't want federal dollars, or they want federal dollars to be able to be conveyed in such a way that they would be considered at some point state dollars to your own state regulations. And you know, in terms of EPA versus DEQ and all the different federal Fish and Wildlife versus Oregon Fish and Wildlife, and I think there are some impediments there that at some levels, and certainly with the federal government versus our state, where we maybe will find certain efficiencies if we can solve some of the federal strings that are attached to some of the other dollars we get and occur to those types of results, and I think that will be part of our discussion. Senator Starr?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to be cognizant of our time, and I could address a lot of different issues that my colleagues have brought up here on the dais, but I'm not going to. I'm going to focus on one issue, and it goes to the visioning committee. On America's roads this year, 43,000 Americans are going to lose their lives. That's about a 737 every other day crashing. And yet we, as policymakers, members of Congress, the administration, you know, it's basically don't do anything. Now, the last reauthorization tried to take a crack at it. They even you put safety in the name of the federal bill. I would hope that as we as state policymakers and at the governor's office and as the committee looks at technologies that exist today, relatively inexpensive, but especially when you compare it to the incredible loss of life that occurs on our nation's highways every year, looks at the technology so that my grandkids are living in an America where we wouldn't tolerate that kind of barbarism on our nation's highways. It's not very difficult. I think that it's going to take some time, and it really takes a conversation with the auto manufacturers, not only in America but around the world, about creating vehicles that not only talk to each other, but talk to the road. And we can create a system that isn't powered by fossil fuels, that that road users pay for the roads they drive on, and we don't, you know, we don't kill tens of thousands of our brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, cousins every year. So my hope is that as a vision committee goes forward, that we look, you know, beyond kind of what's right in front of us, we'll look to that future, in a future where we don't kill people every other day or every day in America.
If I can respond, Senator Metzger. Yeah. Senator Starr, in the second committee meeting of the Vision Committee, when folks were articulating the system that they would like to see in the future, one of the first things people put up on the board was a safer system that was more responsive and where accidents occurred less because the roads were smarter and the vehicles we were using were more equipped to deal with the circumstances. I would ask that if there's specific information or manufacturing standards or information that you think would be beneficial to inform that conversation and help us articulate how we would reach that goal, that you would forward it along to the committee. I think they would be very interested in hearing more.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'll certainly do that. I have the privilege of chairing the NCSL working group right now. We're putting together a policy on the next reauthorization from NCSL's perspective, and this is one of the key issues that we're grappling with. Quite frankly, it's something that needs to happen at the federal level. I mean, the state legislature in Oregon couldn't pass a state law and force manufacturers around the world to do the kinds of things that are required. But we as policymakers here ought to add our voice to those kinds of conversations that are occurring with our partners at the federal level. But I'll be happy to entertain those conversations down the road.
Okay, thank you. George, you had a question, and then
No, I'm okay.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to kind of wrap this group up here. I appreciate you taking the time. We wanted to hear, you know, how your process is going. And as I mentioned, and as you know, since we are participating in many fronts on this issue, as we start developing from the legislative side a proposal for the 09 legislature, we'll try and move our tracks parallel. So. Keep ourselves in tune. So,
and from our end, Senator Metzger, I know there are a lot of meetings involved in this process. You all are getting numerous emails. Chris Warner and myself are available from the governor's office at any time, just a phone call away to provide you with updates if you're unable to attend. But we really appreciate and encourage your participation.
Thank you very much. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Okay, John Rist and Doug Tindall. We'll spend another maybe 10 minutes on this. Okay, thank you, gentlemen. What I want to do is go with Mr. Rist and who is representing Commissioner Adams today, and what I specifically was interested in knowing is the proposal that you're moving forward, what are your thoughts behind it, and I want to know how you think that dovetails with the state and any issues or concerns that you have from what's going on with City of Portland versus what we're doing on the state level.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, John Rist with the City of Portland's Office of Transportation. Thank you for inviting us down today and to talk about what Commissioner Sam Adams is doing regarding transportation in the city, and wish to convey his regrets for not being here. He had a conflict, but he wants to extend his thanks to the committee and especially the chairman for all the help that you have helped the City of Portland in its recent efforts. Commissioner Adams spoke before the interim committee in October of last year. He gave a lot of information. I'm not going to reiterate a lot of that, but what he did say was that Portland's transportation system is facing right now a maintenance backlog of $422 million. Our maintenance backlog is growing at about $9 million per year. From that kind of backlog, he began a dialogue with our citizens and our business community in June of last year. That dialogue was with 21 public meetings. We had two citywide mailings. We have over 80 neighborhood associations in the city that we communicated with. We have 33 business associations that we communicated with. And in the course of that action, he created an 89-member stakeholder committee representing the business community, the environmental community, the neighborhood associations, small business, large business. And from that effort, the commissioner brought forward with the endorsement of the stakeholder committee that the chairman spoke to many times, and we do appreciate your attendance. The Commissioner Adams brought forward a proposal on January 9th to City Council, and that was called the Safe, Sound, and Green Streets Proposal. That new proposal was a street maintenance and safety fee. We looked at a variety of options. We even considered a city gas tax, but that was removed from the proposal. In deference to the statewide effort, I should say. The proposal that the commissioner brought forward was $4.54 per household per month, and for approximately 82% of the businesses in the city of Portland, the monthly fee would be on average $33 per month. The proposal was estimated to collect $24 million per year for 15 years and would be renewed at the end of 15 years. That was $464 million. Over 15 years. Specific projects were identified for each neighborhood in the city. We had 81 miles of arterials that were going to be repaved, and we had specific projects in every part of the city that we knew on these major arterials that were in poor or very poor condition that needed repaving. We identified safety projects, high crash intersections. We have 30 high crash intersections in the city. We identified pedestrian corridors, bicycle corridors, all of these kinds of corridors. We even had a partnership with ODOT that we were going to invest funds on state highways within the city for safety improvements and partner with ODOT on that. The proposal also provided green discounts, and it provided a low-income discount for folks in terms of their monthly fee. We also determined that this proposal was going to be what we called an economic stimulus package also for the city of Portland. It was going to provide 400 new private sector jobs. We were going to invest $352 million in the private sector through paving contracts. The proposal received the endorsement of Portland's business community, neighborhood associations, environmental community, and all the major newspapers within the city. After numerous public hearings, and there were three of them by the City Council, and careful consideration of the testimony that was received, Commissioner Adams decided to reevaluate the process by which the utility fee would be approved, and at this time, the Commissioner is weighing various options of how to proceed forward. A street maintenance and safety fee is not new to Oregon. There are 19 cities that have such a fee in place. They've all been enacted by city councils. Plus, there are 12 cities that have a city gas tax. So local governments throughout the state have stepped up and tried to realize that they have to have efforts at their own level to produce funds. City of Portland recognized that need and brought forward a proposal after careful consideration and numerous public meetings and hearings on a proposal. We would hope that those existing statutory authorities for local governments to raise revenue continues. The commissioner understands the need to do that and fully supports the statewide effort to raise state funds, but also understands that the problems within the city of Portland, and I'm sure it's true for many local governments, cannot be solved solely within this building. So that the city of Portland has looked at what needs to be done. I'll just conclude by saying the commissioner, again, regrets he can't be here and thanks the chairman and the committee for your invitation today, but also wants to say he strongly supports a statewide effort and the partnership that that's going to involve.
Thank you, Mr. Riss. Mm-hmm. What is the framework for public outreach? Could you be going to the ballot in November, it looks like, right, on the safe streets?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's still being
yes, but
considered.
That's kind of the direction we appear to be going on this. And has there been discussions about what the public outreach, regardless of what direction you go, you're going to have public outreach on this. So I'm just very curious as to what the commissioner and the city plans to do, because as we have had conversations before, it's important in my view that you be successful in terms of that communication, because if I applaud what you did, what you have done, and the leadership of Commissioner Adams, I also realize that that your conversation with the citizens of Portland, if it's not effective, it's going to make our job much more difficult 2 months later in what we're trying to do. So I'm very supportive of what you're doing, but I'm curious as to what those outreach efforts are. We have talked many times. You have been hearing from other folks about the need and with the governor's staff about visioning and governance and outreach. You're kind of like our first scout platoon that's going to be out the door. And yep. So we want you to come back safely. So what are some of the plans for outreach and communicating with citizens on this various proposals that are being still back and forth at the City Council?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Specific plans have not been developed yet, but I'm sure to follow the pattern that the Commissioner Adams has demonstrated over the last 6 months, there will be extensive public outreach. I'm sure we will go back to the neighborhood associations. I'm sure we will go back to the business groups. Portland Business Alliance supported our original proposal, and many of the other small business advisory committees supported it also. So I'm sure we will go back, re-engage them in a discussion that looks at, do we continue to move forward with a proposal, or is there some minor modifications that have to occur to get the full public support? So we will re-engage the stakeholder committee. We will re-engage, could be potentially other kinds of task forces the commissioner engages, but there will be further public dialogue, absolutely.
Questions for Mr. Rist at all? Okay, we'll keep this forum
Yes, thank you very much.
Happening. Thank you, Chair.
Just really quickly, the word green came up repeatedly through your testimony, and you actually get to a point where you talk about the fact that will be the emphasis. Describe what green is. And the other question I have is relative to, you say 82% of the businesses will only pay an average of $33. What about the other 18%? What does their take look like? And the third part of that question is, currently, the businesses in Portland metropolitan area, because of the TriMet tax, pay a payroll tax of $187.5 million. And now we're going to encourage them to give cash benefits to employees who take transit. It looks like they already paid at the office. Could you answer those questions for me?
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, the green discounts that were incorporated into the proposal for a homeowner were such of like if they didn't own a car, okay, and if they had demonstrated ability monthly to use transit. For a business owner, it was the ability to provide to their employees transit passes. Okay, so that was their ability to reduce their monthly fee by demonstrating that. Okay, so We learned through our public dialogue with our citizens that that was very important to them, to have an environmental component built within this fee. So that's what in the elements of the green discount that I outlined in my testimony, that's what it conveyed to. Okay. In terms of the business fees, like I said, about 82% of those businesses will pay on average about $33 a month. Obviously, there are some businesses that will pay more. That's true. Mm-hmm. Those are businesses, and the fee is determined based on the square footage of a business property, the type of use of the property, and the estimated number of trips that a business generates every month. So a small CPA office that has five customers a day pays a much smaller fee than, say, a large retail operation, a large grocery store that has thousands of trips a day. So on average, for all businesses within the city of Portland, on average, their fee was $83 a month when you encompass small and large.
What was the 18%?
Saying for Senator George.
I know I got the average thing, but I mean, for the 18%, what was the average of the 18% that they would be paying? Because, I mean, we're talking about what could really be a significant discouragement to locating any kind of manufacturing or warehousing inside a Portland metropolitan area if, in fact, that fee was too high.
Right, right. Well, again, Chair Metzger, Senator George, we did not have any opposition from the large business community within the city of Portland, the Fred Meyers of the world. They supported the proposal. On average, I think those fees were going to be in the range of $300 to $400 a month.
Okay. Any other questions for Senator George?
Thank you, Mr. I had the opportunity to work with Commissioner Adams in talk radio, actually, a number of times, and, of course, with Commissioner Leonard. And one of the things I was always amazed about that came up when Commissioner Leonard and I did our radio show together was the discussion of how the city of Portland spends its transportation dollars. And I just want to say that I think all of us have left our minds open that if a package came up, I don't think there's anybody who wouldn't at least consider voting for a revenue enhancement package. You talk about here that there's $422 million of unmet maintenance needs. Here's the feedback I've gotten from Portland, and of course that kind of covers the rest of us or taints the rest of us, which is the urban renewal districts, which have sucked away tons of amount of money from the tax base into the urban renewal districts, those dollars are being spent in the districts and not on the overall maintenance of the county. Those dollars are then directed away from the basic underlying maintenance needs. Then you have those things being spent on things like the trolley train there in town, and then of course you have the issues with the other projects that people see that are new infrastructure, that are alternative modes of transportation, but not dealing with sort of the food and shelter of transportation before we talk about the vacations and holidays of transportation. And so I guess if I can just say one thing, which would be nice, is that one of the things that we've got to do if we're going to take a package out to the public is have some credibility that we are going to fund the base maintenance first, then those modes of transportation that people use second. And then, if we take care of the food and shelter, then we can start talking about additional new shiny toys of alternative modes of transportation that are more expensive per person to move. And I guess if I could just send, if we could just one message back to the county, to the city commissioners, is that as you go forward and you look at how you've laid out your budgets, it's difficult for us then to talk about backfilling City of Portland maintenance funds when a lot of those dollars were there but got diverted into other maybe useful projects and maybe beautiful projects, but not projects that were on a priority list, that most people wouldn't have spent subsidizing the Pearl District before they subsidized, before they actually took care of basic maintenance. And so all I want to say is, and I hate to be the person who constantly brings up tough issues, but this is one of those issues that, from a credibility perspective, if I'm going to walk out and ask the taxpayers of the state of Oregon to raise taxes, I need to be able to go to them with a good conscience that we are spending our base expenditures are for those base things that people expect us to, which is the infrastructure. And if that message could just kind of get through, that it's a really a priority system. We can't keep paying for the fun things first and then not pay for the basic maintenance until later. And we can't keep diverting those dollars into special projects when the basic fundamental underlying part of government needs to be funded. So that's just some feedback, if I could. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anything else? Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Rist. What I'm going to do, members, is I look at the clock, and Mr. Tindall, so nice of you to be here. And the wonderful thing is we get to see you every day. So what I'm just so I can get to this public hearing on 101, Mr. Tindall has provided a written document on some of the things that I'd like our committee to discuss in terms of things that were part of Senate Bill 566. So I'm going to ask Mr. Tindall if we could have this discussion tomorrow. Does that work for your time frame?
I will try to make it work for my time frame.
And then, members, we have this document to look at and maybe formulate our questions for tomorrow with Mr. Tindall on it. So we'll have a little preview of what we might want to ask about the progress on some of our questions, 566. So thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to close the informational hearing on transportation funding. I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Joint Resolution 101. Patrick, tell us what it is, and then I'm going to ask Mr. Rutschlag to come forward, and then we'll try to move out and let everybody get out into the nice sunshine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, HJR 101A urges communication about transportation funding issues among all levels of government. This measure moved through the House with no objection votes in committee or on the floor. And as you said, Mr. Schlack is here to add some details to that.
Mr. Schlack, please come forward and talk to us why we need to legislate communication. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Art Schlack with the Association of Oregon Counties. And I'm here today to express our appreciation to the legislature for the interest and concern with the plight of counties facing a loss of federal forest payments, and in the spirit in which HJR 101 is before you today. We also wish to thank the House Interim Committee on Rural Policy for introducing this joint resolution. I would just note, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that it is extremely important for all members and all stakeholders that are interested in transportation and transportation funding to be at the table when we have these discussions. And that, I think, is the spirit in which this resolution was drafted and is before you. There has been occasions in the past when all the stakeholders have not been at the table, and I think this recognizes that as we move forward and look at a package in 2009, that it's going to be extremely important for all the members, all the stakeholders to be at the table, and that we have a consensus around a package that we can all embrace at this point. I also think and appreciate the fact that the legislature has a concern with regard to the federal funding that counties are losing that affects not only the general fund but also the area of transportation, and is looking at ways with the governor's task force ways to help mitigate those issues. So I think there's a spirit behind this joint resolution. It is well intended, and we certainly embrace it and hope you do too.
Well, thank you, Mr. Slack. And I think, as you are well aware, the committee is extremely concerned not only about some of the issues from 106.393, the loss of federal funds, but the entire state of our transportation infrastructure, which is why we have people on the committee with as much interest as they do, because they recognize that and the importance of having voices at the table, all those voices, and we heard some of them articulated today about in order to be successful. So we certainly understand why that's important. I want to take the opportunity, since you're here, on to talk about this and the impact of the loss of the Secure Rural Schools Fund. Is, as you know, and I think I was joined by at least one member of this committee, I was not a real fan of the diversion of the $56 million to the counties, not because the counties don't need it, but because I foresaw that it would actually, in many cases, hurt counties' ability to match other things that would be on their STIP, and that they would find out that projects that they had anticipated being done next year or the year after that may, in fact, not get done. And as you know, that has happened and creates some angst among some of our county friends, and some specifically feel that they were actually, based on the match, would actually be losing a net impact of road money because of the changes that the Department of Transportation has done in reaction to that piece of legislation. I'd be interested to hear from you, and I realize every county is not the same. You represent them all, but what is that level of angst based on what the department has done in response to the legislation? And are they still supportive generally of the direction we're going on that, or would they like to have that revisited?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, let me see if I can answer your question this way. When Senate Bill 994 was first passed, there was some concern. And as we've moved through the implementation, it's become very much aware that ODOT has a series of problems that go beyond just the monies that was to be transferred from ODOT to the counties. And those are reflected in a reduction in STIP projects where projects are being, placed into out years rather than maybe realized as soon as they are. It's my understanding that those projects that have been selected are projects where environmental impact statements and other things still need to be done, so they're, shall we say, not shovel ready. At least that's my understanding, that they would be built in the next couple of years, that they would be out in 08, they would be 010 to 013, and now they may be a little bit farther. And those would be the first projects that would be brought back should we get a funding package in 09. We have heard some of those concerns. Those concerns, I would submit to you, are very low at best at this point. That the counties have looked at, and we have looked at preparing a report that would indicate what projects would be undertaken in all 36 counties based on the funds that are available. So counties are moving forward to implement the opportunities they have to put money on county roads that is provided by the legislature. So I would just in summary, Mr. Chairman, say that because ODOT's problems go much beyond just these dollars, that these cuts would in all probability be happening anyway, that the concerns expressed by counties early on are not there as they were 6-8 months ago.
Okay. Senator Starr, then Senator Berger.
Yeah, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I just had a meeting with a county official, not from my own county, that got $400,000, obviously not a big county payments county, from the county payments, from the money that we stole from ODOT. and then they lost $5.4 million in the ODOT reshuffle. So it clearly wasn't a good thing for them. And I would suggest that it was a stupid thing for this legislature to do, to take $56 million out of the highway fund and share it around with counties. When you have counties that are big timber counties that are sitting on $80 million in their road fund, it makes no sense whatsoever. There's a lot of better ways that we could, as a legislature, address the issue of the loss of the timber revenues. As it relates to this bill, as I look at this seems rather silly for us to be passing a bill like this in the supplemental session. Art, have you not been, or your organization or the league, been invited to meetings in the governor's office and on all the email traffic that comes from the three panelists that were up here in the first presentation? I don't see this as being a problem as we're moving forward. This might have been a problem in the past. The fact that we got an HJR to basically say let's all make sure that everybody's at the table seems rather silly.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, representatives of the Association of Oregon Counties are involved in all of the three committees that are established by the governor, and we're also involved in the joint committee dealing with the loss of secure rural schools that the governor has established. So we're, I think, at the table, at least in all of the venues that I'm aware of at this point. And certainly we appreciate that. We intend to fully participate in these discussions as a good partner. This resolution comes to you from a House committee dealing with rural policy. Certainly, it's something that we certainly support, and it's for you to determine how important it is. But I do note for the record that we are actively involved in all of the venues that are currently undertaken.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Berger.
Well, my question was, Mr. Slack, that why was this before this committee rather than the House committee? Because actually that committee, the joint committee, was established to come up with ideas of how to handle the scare. So this is, if I'm to understand what you're saying, this bill actually came out of that committee?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berger, that's correct. It came out of the Rural Policy Committee. It has gone through the House, and as noted by the committee administrator, it passed the House without dissent. So it's now moved to the Senate side for consideration.
Thank you, Senator Johnson.
Thank you. I don't like this bill at all. This reminds me of a time when we were talking about having coordinators to coordinate the coordinators. Passing a bill that seems to be a solution in hunt for a non-existent problem by your own admission in a special session where we were supposed to be dealing with emergencies strikes me as diminishing the stature of the legislature to be even working on something like this. It seems to put the lie to the conversation that we have had all this afternoon, eloquently articulated by Pastor Monroe down there at the end of the dais, about all of us working together, because somehow it seems to suggest to those counties that aren't secure rural schools counties that maybe they're farther down in the queue. There is nothing to me attractive about this bill, and I know you are the messenger, and shooting you doesn't make any sense, but you were the target of opportunity sitting out there.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator Gregory.
Well, you are my target of opportunity. In the bill, it talks down on the resolution in line 16 about deliberations. It's easy for you to say about transportation funding. We just had the city of Portland talk about a 24 cent a gallon gas tax increase, and that's a number that we've heard for about a year. 24 cent a gallon gas tax increase. I would be worried about this thing being tied to a 24 cent a gallon increase. Have the counties taken any position as to what they will support as far as a rate increase?
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, the counties have previously indicated that we would support an increase in the gas tax. There has been no clarification as to how much, what the size of that increase ought to be at this point, and we are participating in the vision committee that is looking at, you know, coming up with a package that could be recommended to the governor and to the legislature.
Okay. Well, I do appreciate you taking the opportunity to get the short straw and come. But I certainly agree with Senator Johnson and Senator Starr. I mean, having a bill that urges subsequent deliberations about transportation funding be as inclusive of all stakeholders as possible is kind of like telling ourselves that we don't trust ourselves that we're going to involve everybody as possible, so we're going to remind ourselves by passing this. But I don't want to take lightly, none of us are taking lightly the fact that the reason we are all so involved in transportation is that we know how important it is that everyone be at the table, and if we're going to be successful, that all these voices need to be heard, and everybody at this diocese is very, very passionate about transportation, as you know, and we don't need to remind ourselves that that we want to hear from other people. We work very, very hard at reaching out and making sure that we do hear from other people. Thank you for taking the time to come and present this to us.
Thank you, sir.
With that, I'm going to close the public hearing and we're adjourned. All right.